I was watching the movie Mondo Cani. For those who don't recognize the name, I'll get to what the movie is about in a couple of minutes. But right now, I want to say what really hit me hard. The movie was made in around 1960, and it was a shocker. It was a documentary. And it had fish in the Bikini Islands who had actually climbed trees to avoid atomic radiation, and birds that had dug into the ground for that, and it had all sorts of astonishing scenes, which at that time was a real shocker. But it had another historical scene that we wouldn't recognize today. And that was what I call a parade of beauty. It was incredible. They switched to a group of young ladies marching in line, and they were incredible. Incredible beauties. They were young ladies in their probably 19 to 24 or younger, in uniforms, marching, every one of them was Nordic, and I could not find a single girl in that group, which is why it was such a shocker, even then, who was not enormously attractive. Believe me, I looked very closely, mainly because I have this obligation to you to look at things closely, so I took the time to look at these beautiful young women, hundreds, thousands of them. And it was just the sort of thing you imagine in your dreams could happen. They were so beautiful. Not a trace of diversity among them. These young ladies were apparently an annual celebration. They were all lifeguards at Australian beaches. Now, the movie was made in 1960, exactly 46 years ago. These young ladies were Australians. There was not a dark one in the group. There was no diversity, just pure beauty. And that was back when Australia had a whites-only, white Australia policy. And the results of it were astounding. You just don't see that sort of thing. And even then, it was a shocker to see all of these beautiful girls marching together. Thousands of them. We have to understand what the word diversity means. Diversity is aimed at a society where everybody is a more or less even mixture of races. Everybody has brown eyes, dark skin, and black hair. So you have lots of people who vary from dark skin, brown eyes, and black hair to people who have dark skin, brown eyes, and black hair. And a sort of mixed racial ancestry. You can find it in Brazil, that most successful of countries. These beautiful young ladies were marching along, and again, they are part of history now from 19. The movie was made in 1960, 45 years ago, the White Australia policy, and every girl was beautiful, and they marched out, and it was really one of those scenes, even in 1960. You just don't get thousands of beautiful girls marching together. In 1961, when I watched it first time, Australia did have this white Australia policy. And at that time, I was hoping that it would continue. But I also made some predictions before then. I reached the age of 20 in 1961. And I was already saying that if Australia gets rid of its white Australia policy, it will not be the Liberals who do it. It will be the Conservatives. And of course, everybody gave me that usual look people always gave me when I made a correct prediction, because people, my predictions sound so incredible to them, but they sound like common sense to me. Well, sure enough, it was the Australian Conservatives who brag about the fact they got rid of this terrible white immigration policy, White Australia it was called, and they now have race riots just like all the other countries. And they're so proud of it. There is no more determined enemy of whites than the respectable conservative. And, of course, the respectable conservative, since he pretends to be the opposition, is the perfect person to subvert white people and to help in the program of genocide against whites. I remember in many, many of the war movies from World War II, when a beautiful blonde woman would show up and some sergeant would say to the young man, "Now that is what you're fighting for." It was supposed to show how macho they were. Actually, according to the weakest generation, the World War II generation, that is precisely what they were fighting against. They did not want blondness. They wanted, they say now, to fight for non-discrimination, what is called assimilation. They wanted America and all white countries, and only white countries, to bring in the third world and assimilate, that's the word they use for it, assimilate with them. That was the anti-racist program of the greatest generation. And what it boils down to is there to be no white people in the future, which means that when this sergeant said in the movie, "That is what you're fighting for," in fact, blonde beauty was precisely what they were fighting against. Hitler was for it, and therefore it had to be done away with. I remember distinctly, once again, most people don't have my memory apparently, in the late 1970s when Pat Buchanan was on firing line, crossfire, I always get those mixed up, and he was trying to prove he was anti-racist, and he and his liberal sidekick there had a racist on there, and Pat Buchanan said flatly, "Well, our men died at Normandy so that Europe would be open to third world immigration." That was Pat Buchanan. It made me a little sick, but that's what the man said. Since then, he has changed his position, but that's what the man said, and that is what he was for back in the late 1970s. But I want to get... You have to understand, I really don't know exactly what I'm going to say next. I cut out a lot of stuff and sort of edit it to you. But I am thinking out loud. So let me go back to this movie Mondo Cani. It's an Italian phrase. It means the world of dogs. And its focus in 1960... is very different from what we will see today. But what I would like for people to do is to get to rent that DVD and look at the movie, and specifically to see this incredible parade of beauties. I've never seen anything like it before. All of these beautiful women, they were not diverse. That is to say, they didn't have any token blacks or Chinese or Tahitians or whatever in among them. they were not diverse because they were blondes and dark-haired and blue-eyed and gray-eyed, and all of them had beautiful complexions. Some of them had the golden complexion that goes with blonde hair. Some of them had the complexion that goes with a particular coloring in our women, that's dark hair, certainly not black. And it was a non-diverse crowd because it was Nordic, and therefore there were all shades of Nordic coloring among them, every one of them beautiful. And if for no other reason, you will want to see that movie. And if you want to see exactly what the World War II generation now says it was fighting against, then you have to look at that parade. Now, there were other things. Remember, 1960, in 1960, I remember distinctly, Japan was very proud of the fact that it had attained a per capita income that was equal to the per capita income in Mexico. This looks a little cross-eyed to us nowadays, but you will see very poor Japanese in the movie, and they're dressed poorly and a little bit dirty and with the straw hats on, and they're, a bunch of them are standing around a steer and rubbing it to produce a softer type of meat, and they're feeding it beer. There are all sorts of things in there that are really shocking. Today, it really was an entirely different world. There are scenes of Hong Kong, Singapore, where the vendors on the streets are selling snakes and skinning them right on site for the housewives. Dog meat is being sold. Nowadays, those same areas have a per capita income very much like the United States, higher than Europe's. But back then, in 1961, the Third World was very much the Third World before the evil white man came along. One of the parts in there shows how great black civilization was on the Gold Coast before the white man came and interfered with them. Every 5 years, after 5 years of starvation, the black population would gather to kill the pigs that they had accumulated. As I said there, that was the only type of property they had accumulated. Every 5 years, they would have 3 days of gorging on pig. Now, when they got there, we're talking about thousands, probably a million black people on the Gold Coast. When they got there, they were starving after 5 years. So their idea of roasting a pig was throw it in. It was to, first of all, it showed them beating the pigs to death. Then they sort of kept the skin on and gave them a quick tanning, because when they cut them open, the meat was raw. They were eating raw pork. And it showed them gorging on the meat 3 days every 5 years. This was the sort of thing that the white man really has screwed up since then. And if you look at the civilization that they had in the Third World at that time, you will see how the evil white man has screwed it up. The Hong Kong, people in Hong Kong live fairly well. The Japanese live fairly well. But you can see the good old days. Mondo Cani also gave us our first look at the cargo cult, which I think most people have heard of. Remember, this is 1961, and a lot of the people down in the South Pacific there had this horrible interference from white people when World War II was going on, and all these huge cargo planes were coming in and bringing all sorts of things that they wanted, food among them. And oddly enough, for those who are worried about the pollution of these wonderful ancient cultures, they liked it. And it showed these colored people standing there in the Pacific Islands watching the cargo planes come in. They would go. Once World War II ended, the number went down, but they could walk to an airport and see these cargo planes come in. Well, like every liberal and every respectable conservative today, they figured there was something wrong with this, because these white people were getting these animals with the wings on them, and at that time the propellers on them, and as far as these people could see, it was unfair, because these animals, these cargo planes, only went to white people. So, and this is right there in the documentary, you can watch them, they started setting up landing bases, clearing areas, and they put up towers that looked like the ones at the airport, and they were inviting these big animals with the wings on them to come to them. And of course, that's pretty well what political correctness says today, is white people just get these blessings out of nowhere, and if we would just build some kind of airports for them, if the third world would just build some kind of airports for them, then they would get all these blessings that white people so unfairly get. So you see the people in the Pacific Islands sitting there trying to get these great big animals with wings on them to land in their airports. And that is not that different from liberal economics or politically correct economics today. To give a good example, it took me years to get across a very simple idea. The libertarians would always say that the borders should be open. In fact, the Wall Street Journal has always, or at least for my entire lifetime, they've had an official policy that they want an amendment to the United States Constitution that says, quote, "There will be no borders," unquote. Now, the idea here is, the libertarian idea is that when someone crosses the border to the United States, a Mexican or a third worlder crosses this border here, his income goes up. So they say, why not? I mean, it's a free good, right? These people cross the border, and that magic border at the Rio Grande makes them richer. Isn't that nice? Now, no one, until I wrote Societal Property Rights, I wrote a whole book to get that point across, no one ever wondered why it is that when the Third World crosses the border, this magic border, into France or Germany or the United States, it never occurred to them that there was a reason why the per capita income goes up when they cross that border. And so, and I'm not kidding you here, all the way until about 2000 AD, well, actually, I put out the book in 1982, they began to change this. But the interesting thing was that everybody assumed that this was a free good, that there was something magic. I'm talking about professional economists. There was something magic about that border. And as soon as third worlders crossed it, their income went up. Nobody wondered why their income went up when they crossed that border. When I say this, I sound a little crazy, and I feel a little crazy, because they took this seriously. It never occurred to them to wonder why this was not magic, a magic wand called a border. Now, the reason that people get a higher income for the same work when they cross a border is because a different people control the country on the side of the border, where the income goes up from the people who control the country on the other side of that border. This is a little like trying to read without moving your lips, and it's very hard to explain basics. No one ever wondered about it. Now, I was a discussant at an economics convention, and there was one Nobel Prize winner there in the audience. And I then also presented my own paper, as I was invited to do, called Societal Property Rights. And I pointed out that the benefits of living inside the United States should accrue to the people who make up the United States. Not one single economist, and we're talking, as I say, one Nobel Prize winner, who's the second reader on my dissertation, not one single economist had the slightest objection. But after I had presented this paper, which I thought would have some effect, these same economists went right back out and went to the same line again. If you cross this border, if they could just get all of India inside the American border, then the per capita income would skyrocket, because the Indians aren't doing very well in India. But if they all came here, they would do very well. This is, granted, unbelievably stupid. Sometimes it's very hard to me to explain how fundamentally stupid things are. But the simple fact of the matter is, no one in the entire economic community gave any thought to why one side of a border pays more for someone to do regular work than people on the other side of the border. It just never came up. In fact, it took me, I then wrote the entire, or put together the entire New Right papers, so that I could make this point outside of an economics convention again. It took years. And I remember how triumphant I felt when I was listening to a radio interview some years after the New Right papers came out, and they were talking to some congressman. And they said, well, as a conservative, don't you believe in the free movement of goods, services, and labor? And he said, lo and behold, something he would never have said if I hadn't written that. He said, yes, but labor votes. In other words, if you bring all of India into the United States is going to be India. That border is no longer going to give them a higher per capita income. The border is not magic. It is the people inside that border who make the difference. Can you imagine how frustrating it is to spend years trying to get that simple point across? Every single libertarian that I heard, that is to say the official voices of libertarianism, wanted open borders because there was this magic. If people just stepped across that border, they were doing regular sort of manual work on the Mexican side or over in India and getting 10 cents an hour for it. And the minute they walked across that magic piece of ground, it suddenly went up to $1.50, or which was fairish money back then. And it never occurred to them to wonder why. Okay, well, this sort of goes with the general theme of my life, which has been dealing with people like Pat back in the 1970s, when he was saying that American soldiers died at Normandy so that the third world could pour into Europe. I was dealing, quite simply, I don't know whether you call it madness, idiocy, but these people believed this. It wasn't just that they couldn't think, or that they were, well, I say it wasn't just because they were trying to get liberals to think that they were not racists, not evil Hitlerites, but they were simply unable to think beyond whatever it was, the latest theory was. As the cargo cult proves, the white race is not the cancer of history, but the white race produces countries everybody wants to live in, technology everybody wants. And that is the one thing that every conservative and every liberal, but particularly every conservative, denies all the time. That there's something racial about the fact that all brown-skinned countries, that is, mixed countries, are poor, except the Arab countries or the other oil countries where white people discovered how to use oil, then whites went, found the oil, and then whites went and got the oil from under their feet. Otherwise, all brown countries are poor. In the Orient, by copying Western methods, and this is something that Orientals will tell you, they think we're kind of funny because we admire their high IQ. They're problem solvers, and they copy very, very well. But in the Far East, there is a whole history of inventions that came to the Far East and then died there. Yes, a Chinese man back in the 11th century or something developed a mechanical clock. It doesn't look like a clock to us, but he was the only one who developed it, and it was finally destroyed, and the mechanical clock disappeared. They got gunpowder, or at least black powder, long before we have a history of it in the West, and they made some fireworks from it, and that was it. They developed printing there in one particular place. Now, when we got gunpowder, the whole society got turned over. We started knocking down castles with it and conquering the world with it, and we reached the moon. In China, it just sort of died. So it's not really, if you look back, you may be able to find some old inventions. The Chinese rice paddy that we consider so entirely Oriental, actually, India was very white in earlier days. The caste system was called Naryu in Sanskrit, which means color. And the Buddha is known to have had eyes the color of the lotus, blue. The fighting method that we know as Kung Fu came from India when it was white. And in fact, the person who brought it into China, there's one legend about him sitting in a cave and using his blue eyes to cut a hole in the wall. So inventions, and also the rice paddies that we talk about, aquatic rice, that is rice raised in paddies, has a yield of about 11,000 pounds per acre and 22,000 in China because they have two seasons. And it is a miracle, that aquatic rice. It's an entirely different plant from what we call wild rice, which is a dry land plant. Somebody had to have the genius of turning this rice from a land plant into the aquatic rice. Well, guess who did that? The Chinese got the aquatic rice from India. So, the whole of history, this is why it's so people are so desperate to deny these things. Generally, if you want the truth, you have to find out what people deny or forget, what the experts deny or forget on orders. And the invention, the rice paddies and things like Kung Fu and so forth that we think of as ancient Oriental were actually brought in by whites. Okay, so what I'm saying is everybody denies all this desperately because it's so obviously true. Back to the parade of beauty that was in Mondo Cani. These beautiful Australian girls marching along there, and it was incredible how beautiful they were. Now, as we know, one thing everybody denies is that white women look good, meaning Aryan women are beautiful. That's one thing everybody has to deny. In fact, Hannity on Hannity and Combs says that Jesus died on the cross for interracial dating. He said, you can't, if you're a Christian, you can't object to interracial dating because what you're supposed to see is two children of God. And Jesus died on the cross for this. I wouldn't like to face the judgment with that one. I am have enough Bible belter into me, so in me, so that the very idea of blasphemy bothers me. Granted, I'm not a good Christian. I have about a 1% faith or less. But there's something in my bones that tells me that I couldn't face the judgment with the kind of statement that Hannity made, turning Jesus into a shill for interracial marriage, interracial dating. And O'Reilly, Bill O'Reilly, he decided it wasn't Jesus who was all for this, for interracial dating. He decided that it was the founding fathers who were for interracial dating. Now, he has said this over and over and over again. He has said that he was attacking the idea in Georgia where the white students have their own prom off campus, and it's all white. And Bill O'Reilly was raising Cain about it, and he kept repeating that the government, that the founding fathers intended for the government to sponsor interracial dances because they call this the United States of America. Now, I feel a little crazy saying this because it's a little hard to believe that anybody would say that. He said it over and over and over again. So, like those economists who thought that, the libertarians who thought there was some kind of magic in this border, that by some kind of magic, people just walk across this border and they turn in to people who make more money. And it never occurred to any of the economists to wonder why. The same thing with Hannity, the same thing with O'Reilly. When I repeat what they said, it sounds insane. Back to the parade of beauties, which obviously has impressed me somewhat. The usual statement is, no. Everybody wants to see mixed blood women. All this story about Nordic women are beautiful is just a myth. Some years back, I think it was in the 80s, there was a program called Baywatch, and it featured Nordic, beautiful Nordic women in skimpy bathing suits on the beach. Pamela Anderson was one of them. And within a year, Baywatch was not just the most popular program in the United States. More important, it was the world's top television program. All these beautiful blonde women. It's disappeared since, and they had the minorities in there and got the complaints. But for years. It was the top program on the planet Earth. Now, you can take the theories of the Hannitys and the O'Reillys, or you can take the reality of the fact that the whole world thinks that Aryan women are just plain beautiful. We are a productive people. We are a beautiful people. You cross our borders, you get richer. You don't mix our women, our genes, you get beautiful people. These are statements that Adolf Hitler made, so anybody who says that a Nazi wants to kill 6 million Jews. Well, I'm saying it because, all crap aside, it's true. This is Bob Whitaker. Program is Untrained Eye. And I hope I'll see you later on with another piece of heresy.